The boundaries have been broken.
Welcome to Vanguard Radio.
Come and get one in the yarbrough! If you have any yarbrough!
Welcome to Area Matters, your news and comment from a white racialist viewpoint. This is your post-July 4th program, and this is James Hawthorne in the Wolf's Lair studio. I have two guests today. We're going to change the format a little bit. We're not going to have two news stories each. We're going to interview two great people who are involved in our fight for racial freedom and racial consciousness. We have the great director of Lion in the Sand and also CEO of October Sun Films, Byron Jost. Welcome to the program, Byron.
Thanks, James. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
And also we have a great lady. She is the director of the Confederate Women of the Southern States of America. Her name is Catherine Ann Down. Welcome to the program, Catherine.
Thank you so much, Mr. Hawthorne. It's an honor to be invited.
Great. We'll come to Catherine in a short while. I want to focus this brief period of the program to Byron. Byron, I want to get your gist on your great DVD, Lion in the Sand. When you first did this DVD, what were your sort of, where were you going with this project, do you think?
Well, I wanted to make a film that dealt with immigration through a racial lens. Every immigrant you see, it's always about economics or culture or whatever. But I wanted to do something that dealt with the racial issue explicitly, because nobody else is, and it's kind of the big elephant in the room. And I was really kind of hoping to make it mainstream in a way.
Well, what drove you to come about and do your own company and do this DVD? Or what drove you to this?
Well, I couldn't do it working for anybody else. Simply, it was the only way that I could do it was to form my own company. Mm-hmm. And handle all aspects of my own. That was the only way I could.
But I'm saying, I mean, as an individual like yourself, I mean, what drove you to the immigration issue and to do this DVD?
Well, I'm from California. I've spent most of my life in the Southwest, particularly in California and Texas, and now in Utah. And the problem has just gotten so bad. You know, the story needed to be told, and I had started, a few years ago, reading about Chris Simcox and Glenn Spencer and what they were doing along the border, and Ranch Rescue also. And it just back in 2003 I just decided to do it. It just seemed like something that needed to be done, and I hadn't seen
and
anything
from
like
the point
that before
that and from the point with the visualization of the project from start to finish, how long did that take you to do?
About the better part of a year and a half. I wasn't working on the film solidly. I mean, during that time, I was working another job, and just the free time and the money that I had, I would use to go down to the border to work on the film and interview people.
All this was done in your spare time, and being director of this project and being CEO of October Sun Films, this is all done on, you ain't getting paid for doing this, correct?
No, I financed the whole thing myself.
Wow.
I wasn't
great.
Getting paid for it or anything. And,
mm-hmm.
It was all self-financed.
So tell people on Area Masses, what's the remit for October Sung Films as you see it? What's the whole philosophy of your company, October Sung Films?
Well, the whole philosophy is to present points of view that are not being expressed through mainstream media channels. You know, it's the whole media mechanism, you know, presents pretty much one side. I mean, even though kind of say, we'll present both sides, you know, Fox News versus, you know, CBS or ABC or anything else, but it's it's essentially one-sided. And I started October Sung Films just to showcase another point of view with roughly the same format that these other media outlets present their points of view. It's alternative media. It's the reason I started it.
So, October Sung Films, as you see, you were enthused to build this great organization as an alternative to the politically correct, can I use that term, politically correct media that refuse to put media that you would put in your company? Would that be correct to say that?
Yeah, right. Of course, I mean, there's been alternative media for years, but it's always been, for the most part, in writing or with audio, and I wanted to do it in video, and to be able, hopefully, to compete for the hearts and minds, using video format. I just think it's obvious that it's very effective. You know, if you look at the effect of mainstream media.
Now, talk about effectiveness. Your the DVD, The Land in the Sand, got some sort of recognition from the United States Congress, I believe.
Back in late September, Yggdrasil and I, Yggdrasil being he's a fairly well-known internet racialist writer, sponsored the sending of 205 DVDs to the most conservative members of Congress, and we did that back in September. And it was after that mailing that I got a nasty letter from the House Counsel on behalf of Tom Tancredo.
Mr. Tancredo, I believe Mr. Tancredo wasn't very happy about him being involved or in the DVD, apparently. What's the story behind that?
Well, all I know is the letter that I got, which is posted on my site. If you go to www.octobersunfilms.com and click on the intimidation link, you can see the letter that was sent to me. And basically, it was just it was an act of intimidation. I he probably thought that I was naive about fair use and use of public appearances, especially by public officials, and so he was scared of the thing. He thought it was going to hurt him, and I don't think it would.
Well,
I don't think it has, and I put a disclaimer at the beginning of the film saying that states that views expressed in this documentary film are solely those of each individual. So I wasn't trying to make a link, between, like, say, Tom Tancredo and Kevin McDonald or Alex Linder or anybody else.
Yeah.
What he says is his. What Alex Linder says is his. What Kevin McDonald says is his. And same for everybody else. But I wanted to include points of views that you would never hear on television.
Mm-hmm. So how has sales been with the DVD?
They've slowed down quite a bit from when it was initially released, and that should be expected. It's still topical, and I'm trying to publicize it in other ways, outside of the internet.
Apparently now you can it's online and you can download the movie now free of charge, correct?
That's right. It is a free download. If you go to www.yggdrasilfilms. That's yggdrasilfilmsplural.com. You can download a copy for free. And it's also on Google Video too. I don't have the exact web address in front of me, but
it's on Google and it's not on YouTube.
To my knowledge, it's not on YouTube, but it might be on YouTube by now. I don't know. I haven't heard about it.
And as October Some Films moves on into greater things, what other projects are on the horizon, if you can tell us?
Well, I'm working on a second project right now, and I'm not going to say what it is until it's released, but it's kind of more of a historical documentary. It's more evergreen than A Line in the Sand, which is a lot more cool. And I still have one more interview that I need to get for it, and I'm still in the middle of doing research for it to find the archival photographic and film footage, that I need.
Uh-huh.
So it's not just a bunch of talking heads.
And as a CEO of October Some Films, what's your vision for the company towards the future?
Well, I would like to grow it bigger and better, every year, and to release a new film every year, and for each film to be better than the last.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got this terrific guy out in South Carolina who's doing some research and is coming up with some really incredible stuff. And I'm really looking forward to getting this next film done and out. I think it's going to be better than The Line in the Sand, I hope.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Byron, October Some Films, I mean, when was October Some Films founded?
Well, I registered the company in 2005, is when it was founded as an LLC.
And your first production was The Line in the Sand, and as everyone knows who listens to Area Masses, it was a blockbuster, as they say, in the horse trading world. The stallion booted the door through, and it came through the, and the horse jumped over the thing and went and won. It was such a great DVD, and we're looking forward to your next one, and future products with October Some Films. Everybody who listens to Area Masses knows about The Line in the Sand. We are behind you, my friend, in your next project, and in future projects. I've heard a little word about a major project which will maybe happen next year, and I'm really looking forward to that. I'm urging every member, every person of every organization who is involved in the white nationalist cause to support the projects of Byron Jost and October Some Films, because you know what? No one else is doing what Byron's doing, and we should support him 110% with our money. With people who know people with money should contact Byron and finance his future projects. But do you know why? Because Jewy Spielberg gets his financed by the Jews, and we need, as white nationalist people and white people, to finance our people. And we have a great, talented person here, Byron Jost, October Some Films, and we need to finance these people with our money. And an old English saying, stop pissing on the chips, so to speak, and to give people who can push forward our message. And Area Masses says, support Byron Jost, October Some Films, with everything you can. Any spare money, send it to Byron so as he can build and make greater projects. I want to introduce there, I just heard her peek through there, through the microphone at me in my ear. I want to introduce a great lady. She is the director of the Confederate Women of the Southern States of America. I want to introduce to everyone on Area Matters a great lady, and her name is Catherine Ann Duncan. Welcome to the program, yeah. Catherine.
Thank you so much, Mr. Hawthorne. I hope you can hear me okay. You know, I'm connecting from the deep south, and sometimes we get intercepted a bit. Can you hear me okay?
Well, Catherine, yeah, I can hear you. Tell me a little bit yeah. about yourself and the Southern women. What's going on down there?
Well, actually, first I'd like to say, isn't it wonderful that Byron Yoss financed that film, The Line in the Sand, of his own accord, and he did all that work. It was a labor of love that he did himself. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty admirable, and I have a lot of admiration for him. Let's see, in the deep south. Well, we have the Mexican invasion going on here, just as the rest of the country in America. We sure do. In fact, my mother reported to me, she went to some conservative meeting about immigration not too long ago, said that there's a sign on the border in Mexico that says there's plenty of work in Gainesville, Georgia. An immigration officer actually told her that. And so there's signs on the border that say, you know, there's plenty of work in this, you know, small Georgia town or what have you. And they're coming in. And I've noticed that a lot of the local churches, even the Presbyterian Church, the Methodist Church in my hometown, Sam Jones United Methodist Church, has a sign up offering free lunch, free sandwiches, what have you, in Spanish. And I really wonder how these traditionally white denominations can hope to maintain their religious integrity or their cultural integrity if they get, you know, if they're trying to convert a bunch of Mexicans or draw in a bunch of non-white third worlders. That's one of the things that's happening in my hometown. I'm very concerned. I'm ethnically Scottish Presbyterian, and how in the world could the Scottish Presbyterian faith expect to survive by inviting a bunch of, well, non-white, third-world people, Indian mestizos, into their faith, and I guess they want to fill the pews, but I really don't think it's going to work out in the future. What do you think, Mr. Hawthorne?
I know, Catherine, I mean, you know, I'm here in the United Kingdom, and I have a rough idea where Georgia is, but correct me if I'm wrong here, but Georgia is nowhere near the Mexican border, correct?
No, we're really not, but we've got tons of them flooding in. They will swim, run, jump, or die to get the United States. And also, a state that's more inland, North Carolina, is having a huge Mexican influx as well. And they're everywhere. I don't know how they get here, but any kind they can find any kind of job to do, usually in Georgia, their entree into Georgia is through landscaping companies. And one thing I've noticed, I used to live in a white flat area, Cobb County, and there are tons of white guys who own landscaping companies, and they hire all these Mexicans. And that seems to be a very big way that a lot of the Mexicans come in here, and you know, they pile up in homes and apartments and have 20 relatives in each. You know the drill. Well, I guess you don't have a lot of Mexicans there in Britain. You have other ethnic problems that
we got Pakistani problems and Bangladeshi problems and North African problems. But here's something for people who listen to Every Masses in Europe. Can you, if you can, where Georgia is, what's the state below you?
Well, there's Florida and Alabama right next door to us. My father lives in Florida. Now, he lives in a town that is not really invaded, actually. And that, he's very fortunate. It's mostly white, and they don't have a Mexican invasion. He has maybe two Mexicans in the whole town, which is a miracle. At one time, we were having target practice out at the hammock, that's Daddy's place, and The Mexican neighbors down the road called the sheriff's department thinking we were shooting at him, but we weren't. He can still live as the lord of the manor, if you will, and still believe that whites are in charge. And I have a lot of relatives who are that way. They may be racially conscious to a certain extent, but they don't realize what is happening to this country, and they don't see a lot of miscegenation, or they don't see the jobs being taken away by non-white foreigners, and they're untouched. So in some ways it's very difficult for me to communicate with some of my family members about the crisis that's occurring all over the white world.
Yeah, I'm supposed to, as we say in England, bust a chop here. We saw all these stuff in England about, the white people standing up against segregation, and we saw all these great documentaries, and we get fed them all the time on the television over here about segregation now, segregation never, you know.
How evil the South is.
And we always hear about the problem in the Deep South in America with blacks. Now, for you, as the director of the Confederate Woman of the Southern States, to come out and say, well, the blacks are not really the problem at the moment. It's now a new invasion of Mexicans, and you're nowhere near the border. That's going to be a really shock for people in Britain and Europe, too. I mean, what the hell's going on there?
Yeah, and, you know, white Americans are absolutely puzzled by it. Why our current president selling this country is country down the totally river. Obviously, there's a corporate interest in getting cheap labor, but I think there are other things involved. And also, blacks are still a problem. As you know, whites are assaulted far more often, you know, with the black-on-white crime than whites ever bother blacks. We whites in America tend to mind our own manners and not bother other people. We're just that way. I suspect you understand that. But not only do we have the black issue, which is a horrible conundrum, but now we are faced with an influx of mostly Mexicans, and it's unfortunate to see that a lot of people, at least down here, think the Mexicans are harmless to a certain extent. Now, most white men I talk to, they do not like the Mexican invasion. They realize that it's going to affect their economic life. But a lot of the white women I talk to, unfortunately, think, oh, they're so sweet, these sweet little Mexicans. They don't understand how it will change the culture, not for the better. I've noticed in Atlanta, in the Atlanta area, most folks who can survive in Atlanta live in at least a $400,000 house, and they have gated communities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost becoming like Argentina or Brazil, where, you know, the wealthy European elite who don't care for the working class can afford the gated communities, the two-bedroom house with one bathroom that costs $400,000, and it's a fixer-upper, can live in that kind of multicultural situation. And we are basically the new South Africa, if you will. We have lived with this for so long. Not only speaking about the Mexicans, but the black flag. And now, you know, since the Reconstruction and things like that, the other part of the country, the Yankees, if you will, wanted to keep the blacks down south since the Reconstruction and during the Civil Rights Movement, certainly. They just, when the blacks would riot, they just wanted to keep the violence down south, keep it down south, punish the southerners. And that has been a perennial problem. Now I notice up north, towns in Massachusetts and Vermont are complaining about non-white influx, or they're complaining about the black invasion or the Hmongs or the Vietnamese or whatever, the Mexicans. They're starting to complain about that, and I have to say, you know, like you said, in Britain, when y'all watched it on the TV about those evil white southerners and didn't understand why we thought segregation was a good thing to have, y'all are facing this now. And now I see the Yankees who watched it on TV during the Civil Rights Movement saying, oh, those horrible Southerners. Why don't they love the blacks down there? I don't understand it. Yeah, they never had any blacks in their neighborhood. They never had to deal with
exactly.
black crime. And if I may digress, the reason the Klan was formed during the Reconstruction was because of the black crime and the rapes, robs, and murder. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's why we have segregation. The Klan actually saved the South. And I hope I'm not getting off topic, Mr. Hawthorne, but that's a brief overview. And we have to have some kind of white racial consciousness, some kind of white barrier that will protect our people. We have to have that. And
you know what?
I'm so sorry that y'all have to go through that.
It is, yeah. I mean, Catherine, I mean, it was the first white people to rise up against, basically, people against our race was the Confederate States of America. They not only stood up, they fought a war against the Northern aggressors. If I can euphemistically call the North the aggressors against the Confederate
they
States
were.
Of America.
Absolutely.
Well, they were the aggressors, absolutely.
It was the war of Northern aggression.
Mm-hmm.
And all our people wanted was to separate out and secede peacefully. And there are some libertarian states in the United States. They're trying to build a secessionist movement, you know, move to a state. And also, I believe in Canada, there are, you know, some folks who would like that. Notice how, historically, has there ever been a government on earth that would allow any people to secede peacefully? I haven't noticed it. Have you? Why is peaceful secession fought with aggressive war throughout history?
That's a good question, Catherine. I mean, I'm from a country where only recently we have fully understand what mixing with or being forced to mix with people that are not from our culture, are not from our racial consciousness, and are not from our heritage. And you know what? Our people who used to call people like me in the 70s racists, Nazis, are now calling me a friend because we're there for them when there's nowhere else to go.
And if only they listened to Enoch Powell way back then. I mean, when was the Rivers of Blood speech given?
That was Enoch Powell, and that was in about 1969. Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was a great speech, and Enoch Powell was a conservative member of parliament, and he predicted that if mass immigration kept on, there would be rivers of blood. And you can go online and you can Google that. Just type in rivers of blood, Enoch Powell, and read his full speech. It's online. And he said, if mass immigration, no matter what white people, are force fed by the, as I like to call it now, as we all know what it is, the Jewish media, if white people are fully cognizant of what's going on here, they will not accept this immigration on them. They don't want it. They will not accept it. They're like white people are like black people, like Chinese people, like Indian people. We want to be amongst ourselves. That's the bottom line on everything.
Absolutely.
And that is something that is completely alien to these other races. You know, it's preposterous to them to think that we should have our own living space.
Mm-hmm.
They think that they are entitled to come to North America and to Europe and to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
That it's their right. It just seems so self-evident, so logical that people should have their own living space. And, the fact that, this Jew... what's his name? Over in France, pushed through this immigration law, basically requiring that anybody emigrating to France has to be skilled. He's kind of like the French neocon, but he's right in that respect. And the fact that requiring skilled immigration to France, the Africans started screaming racism. That's unjust. That's unfair. We have a right to go to Europe. You know, how dare you say that your immigrants have to be skilled? And
And
it's the same way the Mexicans view America. Anyway. They view it as their right. They are entitled to come to this country.
Oh, let me ask Catherine. Catherine, are there any laws in the southern states that have been enacted by the federal government to stop you pushing forward your white racial interests in the South?
To my knowledge, no. However, we have a lot of the hate crimes law. If someone, for example, were affiliated with a group and they committed a crime, as you well know, then the federal government would probably prosecute about civil rights violations, federal civil rights violations, things like that. To my knowledge, there are no laws actually directly against a white heritage group. However, they got a lot of ways around that. And also, if I may say so, I've noticed that during our civil rights movement that went on down here, most of the Yankees, as we call them, who came down here and, as they say in Alabama, tried to stir up trouble, they're a bunch of liberal Jews.
Some of them were Jews.
A lot of Jews, Northern Jews, honest to God, came down here to destroy our culture. And that's exactly what they did.
Yep.
So it's, from here in the UK and Europe, and we look across the pond, the great pond of the Atlantic to the United States, and we see a homogeneous nation, but really, just like Europe, it's a facade. It's not really homogeneous. It's a situation where white people will eventually, hopefully, break free from this political correctness in the United States.
But I'll tell you about the South sickness. If you studied George Lincoln Rockwell, he would say that when he would do his speech making, we call them stump speeches down here, when he would tour the South and he would give a speech, people would come up to him and say, "We understand about the blacks and the Negro problem, but what's wrong with the Jews?" And he'd go up north and he'd give a speech, and people would come up to him and say, "Well, we understand about the Jews, but what's wrong with the blacks?" And see, this country's divided on that. And that was a problem for him. He recognized it. And in the Deep South, I believe the Secretary Treasurer of the Confederacy was a Jew. We have that problem down here where a lot of Southerners are sick of the black problems and, the Mexican invasion, other ethnic problems, but they have absolutely no conscience, no idea whatsoever about the Jews. The Yankees, who came down here to destroy our culture in the Civil Rights Movement, to them, they're just white Yankees. They didn't understand this was a Jew-led movement to destroy our Southern culture, which it was.
I think most of those Yankees were Jews. Most of those Yankees were Jews.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point. It was a Jewish-led movement to destroy the Deep South, to destroy our culture, destroy our part of the country, and the great Jewish do-gooders, or whatever they thought they were, or communists, if they weren't card-carrying communists, they certainly were in spirit. They wanted to destroy a white, solid Gentile culture, in my opinion.
Yeah, and the South was the front for that war.
We were.
Here's a question for you.
Patriarchal, Christian, Gentile, white Western culture. Stay ahead, Miss.
Here's a question. Here's a question for you. What did the blacks think of the Mexican invasion?
There's a lot of racial tension between, the blacks and the Mexicans, as everybody knows. But, the thing is, they will unite in their hatred for whitey. As much as they hate each other, they hate us even more. And I saw that when I was in Las Vegas at the anti-illegal immigration summit that's in the line of sand. there was a contingent of Nation of Islam that showed up to show solidarity with the Mexicans. Never mind the fact that the Mexicans are displacing the blacks, but they hate us even more than they hate each other. I thought that was remarkable because, you know, logically you would think that Nation of Islam, these militant black nationalists would be against illegal immigration with all these Mexicans coming in and displacing them. But that's not the case.
I have a theory. Here's my theory. They'll want to get rid of white people. Once they join together to get rid of white people, then they'll decide to, sort themselves out against each other. I think that's the plan. They'll come together as so-called minorities to get rid of us white people, inventors of civilization, geniuses, you know, who build great cathedrals in Europe, who build our great Aryan lands. But once these people, these mud races and these sick spics and these people who want to destroy white Aryan people, once we're gone, then they'll come together and they'll sort of, you know, decide to, the blacks will decide to get rid of the Mexicans or vice versa. That's my apocalyptic view of the world, if white people don't fight back.
Well, you know, I think they're fighting over their slice of the white man's pie. I think on some level they know that they couldn't live in this kind of comfort without white civilization. You know, maybe it's kind of coming together. Let's see how we'll divvy it up. It's kind of like, you know, they hate us, but they need us.
I think, whether they realize it or not, I think they're like angry adolescents at best versus a race of two-year-olds. They want the white man to set the rules and create the infrastructure that they can live off of and survive and thrive in. I think when the guilty white liberals, when they kowtow to the non-whites, and certainly in this country the blacks, the non-whites get angry because Big Daddy isn't setting the rules. Then they get angry because we're not using the old iron hand that Mighty Whitey used to use to help them. Because when whites do set the standards of society, they're better off. And I think that secretly they know that and resent it. Have I made myself clear?
Sure. Here's a question for you, Catherine, from everyone who's in Europe who has no clue what's going on in the South where you live. I mean, what's the feeling, I mean, in the South with regards, I mean, the Mexicans are coming in now. I mean, to me, that was an utter shock for you to tell me that the Mexicans are coming on. Never mind the blacks are all there. I mean, how are white people reacting to the invasion of the people from Mexico to the southern states of America?
Well, they're basically two reactions. I've seen white folks, both male and female, who've moved up from Miami to Cobb County, which is a white flight area, as I've said before, to get away from it. Then the problem we have down here is the other side, where there are so many people, even in white flight areas, who try to employ the cheap Mexicans. And they say it's their business. And, you know, their business thrives upon these cheap Mexicans. And you will see adverts in newspapers for, you know, John Smith's Landscaping Company, and he'll have a bunch of cheap Mexicans there. So it's pretty much black and white. It's one or the other. I've seen some folks who are not crazy about the invasion, but they'll say, oh, but they're so polite and so sweet. And
until they reach critical mass.
And unfortunately,
they haven't experienced critical mass.
My daddy tells this joke. It's very crude, but if I may say so, he said, "Why did God make redneck slatterns?" So the Mexicans would have somebody to screw. And unfortunately, a lot of that miscegenation is going on among the really obese and unattractive, you know, white females. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, and I don't really like it. I don't. like seeing a white girl, no matter how fat, walk down the street with a Mexican Indian. It gives me no pleasure to see that. I'm not real happy about it. But basically, we've got two categories down here. The folks who know that this massive non-white immigration is harmful, they don't like it, even though they're not totally racially conscious or aware, they don't like it. And they're on the stand, we're same page, we've got the other folks who say, well, gosh, gee whiz, I can put my kids through college because I employ these cheap Mexicans from a landscaping business. And that's even in a white flight county. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally shocked. I mean, I'm sure people who listen to Area Matters in Europe. I mean, I had no idea that Mexicans are flooding into Georgia. We all hear the stories that they're flooding into California, New Mexico, Arizona. That's all we hear. But for them to flood into Georgia,
Alabama, and North Carolina. A friend of mine from Oklahoma said they had cultural lessons, sponsored by the taxpayers, of course, to try to teach the Mexicans not to drive drunk and not to engage in their littering. And if you go to any traffic court in Georgia, you will see a million Mexicans there who are driving without insurance, driving, you know, drunk, what have you. And they don't understand it. They don't understand the culture. They don't understand our laws. And also, I was at the Cobb County Health Department a few years ago trying to get my birth certificate. It was like a little Tijuana. It was filled with nothing but Mayan Danyas and their broods of children.
Mm-hmm.
Cobb County's health department, their free health department, is overrun by Mexicans. It is to the point where it's unbelievable.
There have been over 20 hospitals that have closed in L.A. County alone, you know, because of the strain that these people put on our healthcare system. Also, there is not a single county you can go to in this country anymore that doesn't have Mexicans. That's how many there are here. It's a huge problem. It's not just a problem with the Western United States or the Southern United States or the Southwestern United States. It's all over.
I hear they're nowadays.
Yeah, there are. I've heard stories of Mexicans up in the Yukon Territory. It's unbelievable. The problem is huge, and Congress and all our government officials keep saying, oh, yeah, there's only 12 million. No, that figure is more like 25 or 30 million. The highest I've heard is like 41 million. Mm-hmm. I think maybe like 36, 37 million is probably a more realistic number. I mean, just and I've done a lot of traveling, you know, throughout the U.S., and I'm from L.A., and there's a lot more than 12 million. There's probably 12 million alone in L.A.
I just want to interject here.
I
have two great opportunities here. I have a great lady from the South who represents the Southern people of America. I have a great individual who I could say is from the North, Byron. He's from the North of America. Can I ask you you both a question? And I'll ask Byron first, then I'll ask Catherine. What do you foresee in the future in America in the next 20 years?
In the next 20 years, it's difficult. I mean, it's hard to say.
White people fighting back?
I don't know. I mean, they kind of are now, albeit in kind of a lame way. I mean, it's to the point where people are just, contacting their politicians, violent uprising or civil war. I don't know. I can't say.
And how about Catherine? We didn't in England, by the way. We didn't read about the. Do you know what? Here's something for you two. We never read about the American Civil War in our history classes, and you know why? It was a war we lost. So we had to read about, they used to say euphemistically about George Washington and all that, but we never knew about General Lee and about the Civil War. In my classes, I was never taught about the Civil War
and
what the Civil War was about. No, it's quite shocking. So Catherine, I mean, as a representative of the southern state of America, can you see ever again the South rising up against the ubiquitous North?
Well, you know, the one who wins the war writes the history books, doesn't he? And we've seen that with the Deep South, we've seen that with Germany. My honest opinion, if I may be frank, is that there may come a day when only the meanest, most racially conscious sons of bitches are the last survivors of the white race on this earth. And I hope that's true.
All I can say, it's happening in Europe right now. White people are waking up. They are truly waking up. Aryan people in Europe are waking up. And do you know why they're waking up? They're waking up because...
Wonderful to hear that. Thank you know God. Why,
and do you know what, Catherine and Baron? They're waking up because...
aren't they?
No, no. The reason why they're waking up is they can't run away anymore.
Yeah, they can't run away anymore. They're being forced to.
They're waking up is like, yeah, okay. There's nowhere left to go, but they also have a strong... ethnic identity, which white Americans have kind of been stripped of.
I don't know, Byron. I mean, I'm from England, and you know what? There's only in the past, let me see now, in the past 4 years, that English people have felt Englishness. And the reason why English people have felt Englishness is because Scotland has been granted their own parliament. Wales has been granted their own parliament, but that's just a side issue.
But certainly English people felt a great sense of being English during the great days of the empire, right?
No, not really. No.
And it's
They had a great feeling of being British, yeah. But you know, all these governments came in and slided the British thing by because of the Great Empire. You from India are British. You, if you hold a passport from Pakistan, you're British. You know. But now it's a cold word because white people are waking up.
Did they feel that way prior to World War II? To embrace India and
Israel. They didn't.
No, of course not.
Not on a racial conscious level as they do now.
Yeah.
White people are waking up in Europe.
Europe, you know, it isn't a monolith. I mean, you can't say, you know, maybe you can say Europeans in general, but specific nations are becoming more racially aware because these specific nations have kind of more of a sense of a national identity and of being the indigenous peoples.
Now we have racial, it's racial consciousness. Nationalist organizations in Europe are organizations, no matter what's said in the Jewish media, if you go to these organizations and you meet these members and these people who lead these organizations, they believe in our people, European white people.
Mm.
And to get there to power, no matter what it takes, we're going to do it. And my friends and Byron and Catherine, I want to encourage you both in the United States to push forward the message to keep white racial consciousness alive in America. Our day is going to come. I want to thank Byron for being on the program today. Thank you, Byron, and keep up the great work
with
October Sun Films. You can go to Byron's website, octobersunfilms.com. Please, everybody, give him finance. He needs finance. He has great projects for our people in the future, and we need to support him. I want to thank Catherine Ann Duncan from the Confederate Woman of the Southern States of America. Thank you, Catherine, for being on the program. It's been a pleasure talking with you. And I hope to see you on again. And I want to thank everybody for being and listening to Area Matters. And we will see you next time.
Area Nothing Matters is brought to you by the Vanguard News Network in cooperation with Wolf Flair Studios. Go VNN.com.
The problem is for the next generation. That's when the hurt's going to come by.
Let's kick that gringo in the ass. Come on. Let's go.
They're taking over, and you're a racist pig if you resist.
Go back to Europe.
It's a war. I'm a pain gun. In the last 2 years, I started buying guns.
You don't make anything better by adding 30 million Mexicans to it, do you?
I'm not going to sit by on my couch and get fat while my country disappears.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready to hear from the founder of the Madman Project?
I'm gonna show you an armed vigilante right here.
These are our weapons.
The reforms in immigration that have completely altered this country have been the result, really, of elite sentiment and frankly, ethnic interest group lobbying and so on.
The Democratic Party sees massive immigration, both legal and illegal, as a source of voters. On the other side, the Republican Party sees massive immigration, both legal and illegal, as a source of cheap labor.
There's absolutely no immigration law enforcement, which means we have no borders, which means we have no nation.
If we don't choose this border, again, as the line in the sand, to our own government, about what we the people demand and what we expect from the government, you might as well just check it in and make sure there's something good on TV every night and stay out of their way. Don't do anything wrong, because you won't stand a chance.
The United States government has refused to effectively protect the southern border with Mexico for 40 years. Average American citizens are now banding together to stand up against a government they feel no longer represents their interests. October Sun Films presents The Line in the Sand, a documentary by Byron Jost. Visit OctoberSunFilms.com for more information.
Free your mind of its alleged thought crimes with Vanguard Radio.